There, bakeroos and bakerettes, welcome to the Rise Up podcast. I'm Mark Dick. I'm your host, and I'm very glad that you're listening to the show today. This is the podcast about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and the communities that we serve with our great baked goods. So I'm really glad that you're here today. Today on the show, I have a live chat face-to-face with Jesse Merrill of Polestar Hearth in Guelph, Ontario. It's one of the interviews I recorded on the recent trip that Cindy and I took to Ontario back in late September and early October. And it's a really good interview. I think you're going to like this one quite a bit. We even have some customer interaction throughout the chat as well. And I got most of the background noise out of there too. Part of the fun of doing conversations in bakeries is that you get a chance to really absorb kind of the energy that goes into the baking and the life back around the bench. The bad news from a podcasting point of view is that you get quite a bit of background noise. And I think I got a lot of it out of there. You still hear the bells when people are coming into the shop, and when they run the slicer, you're going to hear that because slicers are noisy, awful beasts. And there's not a baker that likes them, but lots of customers do, so we buy the things. But anyways, Jesse's a great guy, and I think you're really going to like the chat. Before we do that, though, what's going on? I am recently recovered from a bout of PVSD, which is a thing that I made up, and I'm calling it post-vacation stress disorder, because when we got back from Ontario, I literally moped around the house for 3 days before I could get back into the swing of things. Even getting last week's podcast with Arlo and a bit of the trip report together was just like pulling teeth, because when you get in that mode of traveling, you just want to keep on traveling, keep moving, keep seeing new things, keep going to new bakeries and you know, tasting someone else's croissants and that kind of thing. And you get back home and all of a sudden, all of those odd jobs that you need to get done never got done while you're away. And, you know, there's lots to do and the oven's cold and it takes extra firings to get it going again. And so it was a hard few days for sure. But I have to say, once I got baking again, it all went away. All of that stress disorder stuff just kind of melted away. And when I was mixing the first doughs on Friday morning, it felt pretty good, you know. But really for me, when I pulled the first loaves out of the oven and, you know, got a whiff of the aroma and my sense of smell came back a little bit, and I was like, man, this is good. And they look good. And my second batch, I had a little bit of dough left over. So I made myself a little mini loaf for a snack of my country sourdough. And once that had cooled down and I bit into that, it was like, oh, this is good stuff again. So I'm back. I've got the energy. I've got the positive vibes and a smile on my face again. You know, what the bread didn't cure, having all my customers come into the garage over the weekend and pick up their bread certainly cured that. It was great to see everybody again. And for anyone listening that is baking and is always in the back, is always at the bench or at the mixer or at the sinks doing your work, and you feel down for just a little bit, or you're just feeling like, I don't know why I'm doing this, go out and serve a few customers and bag up some bread for them, and you'll remember pretty quickly why we do what we do. Because when you see how happy customers are with what you made, it kind of makes all the aches and pains go away for a little bit. So that's my advice, or that's my treatment that I give myself, is if I'm feeling down, I bake some bread, talk to some customers, and life is good. So that was fun. I also had a special guest in the garage on the weekend. My new friend Travis from Minot, North Dakota, came up to see me. Travis is going to be opening up his own retail space in Minot pretty soon, and he's been doing the subscription model out of shared kitchens and that in the meantime. So he's about 4 hours away from where I live, which in when you're in Saskatchewan and North Dakota, that's pretty close. So he came up for a visit, and he went up to Saskatoon to see Tracy and Bryn up, and Trent up in Saskatoon as well. So he had a bit of a whirlwind weekend, and we got to spend Saturday morning / afternoon in the garage talking about everything that I could remember about starting up Orange Boot Bakery and staffing and training and compensation and all of the business kind of stuff, because Travis has good baking chops. I don't think there was much that I could show him that he didn't already know about that. But on the business side, it was like, here's every mistake that I made that I haven't pushed way down in my subconscious, that if I can remember it, I'll share it. So I did. And we had a really great afternoon. And that was a lot of fun. And he even got to meet some of the folks when they came in to pick up bread too. So that was good. And the only other bit of news for me is I'm going on the speaking tour because it's October. One of the things that the local libraries love here is when folks that run businesses come out and give talks in the evening. And they especially like when I come out and give a talk because I bring free samples. So I'm giving two bread talks and flour talks at different libraries over the next couple of weeks, which should be a lot of fun. And I hear they're sold out, which, like I say, it's all about the free samples, I figure. If you want to get a waiting list for your talks, tell them that you're bringing food and you'll sell out. But I got another weird call or a weird email just last week as well from a group at Agriculture Canada in Tisdale, Saskatchewan, which is about 3 hours from here, asking if I would come up and give a talk about the science of bread baking. And that's going to be kind of fun because I said yes, and now I have to figure out what the heck I'm going to talk about. It's a little bit intimidating because I know some folks that actually really understand the science of bread baking, like actual scientists and actual chemists and that kind of thing. But I'm banking on the fact that that's not what the folks at the office at Ag Canada want to hear. And they don't really want to get into the, you know, molecular design and that kind of stuff. But they want to know more about what does salt do and what's gluten and, you know, what are these enzymes anyways? And I'll talk a little bit about lactobacillus and their lactic acid bacteria and that kind of stuff. And hopefully that will be good enough and they will be entertained and informed enough that they're going to give me lunch. So I'm working for a free lunch and some gas money next week. So that'll be fun. But I always love to get out and meet people. So it should be a really good time. So that's my next couple of weeks when I'm not baking and podcasting. I promised last week that I would read out some emails, and I will because I got quite a few here. So I'm going to just give you an overview of some of the people that I'm getting to meet through the show. So I got an email from a lady named Denise who says, "Love your podcast. I bake cakes and cookies at home. I don't have much confidence in bread baking, but it's on my bucket list of things to learn to bake." And well, Denise, go for it. Absolutely. Denise sent me a video from YouTube, said, "Have you seen this one?" And I hadn't, but I recognized some of the folks in it. And without giving it away, I'm actually talking to one of the folks in that video in a few weeks' time, the next time I go traveling. So I'm very excited about that. And I'll tell you what, Denise, you could do a lot worse than watching some of those YouTube videos and then just going for it and try baking some bread, because it's not that tough. You can get it. Yeah, I'm sure you can do it. If you can figure out cakes, which I can't do, I'm sure you can get the hang of bread. So go for it for sure. I also got a note here from David. David, who will actually get mentioned, he gets a shout out from Jesse in our talk ahead. He's the baker at Cliffside Hearth in Scarborough, Ontario. And he says, love to bake and listen to bakers asking other bakers questions about baking. It doesn't get any better. And David, that should be the tagline of the show. Listen to bakers asking other bakers questions about baking. There. I'm gonna steal that one. So thank you. I'm glad you're listening, and hopefully we can talk more in the future as well. And then the episode 2 weeks ago with Michael Sellers grabbed a few folks. I really enjoyed that talk. It's one of my favorites so far. And I got an email from Kathleen in the UK, which is awesome. So hi, Kathleen. She said, you know, I just finished listening to the podcast with Michael Sellers and felt compelled to email you to say thank you. It was exactly what I needed to hear. It was interesting from start to finish, and to hear that you are not alone when filled with doubts and the imposter syndrome peering over your shoulder. That's very comforting. So thanks to you and Michael again. And I hope that the car is running fine, because she sent this before we went on the trip, and it did. We made it home. So thank you, Kathleen. And I'll tell you, the doubts and the imposter syndrome never goes away, I don't think. I think at best, you can learn to, if you're feeling that imposter syndrome, that maybe you're on the right track. If you can teach yourself to think that, that's what I told myself when I said yes to this science of bread baking talk. I said, you know, Lee Glass or Andrew Ross or Debbie Wink would be much better at this, but you got me. And so I'll do the best I can. And so, yeah, so maybe, when the imposter syndrome grabs you, maybe that's just a sign to keep on, pushing that you're on the right path. So keep going, Kathleen. I'm so glad to hear from you. And thanks for reaching out all the way from the UK. That's thrilling to me. Honest, true. It's the best. And then we got another email here from just a couple of days ago from a lady named Glenda. She said, hi, Mark and Cindy. Wanted to thank you for the podcast. She is an older lady that's starting a new journey in life, baking breads and pastries for a local dairy farm from her home here in the tri-state area of the Lower Hudson Valley in New York. She started baking to help out the dairy farm, and it's been well received, and she's thinking of slowly getting more out of the box, with the focus being on slowly. She said that, I just wanted to let you know that I've learned so much from listening to your shows. I listen over and over and even take notes, which, wow, good for you. Thanks for that. Maybe you can fit in people with experience in small home bakeries as well. Great idea. That's certainly, my experience right now. So, that's of interest to me for sure. And, also, is the Bread Bakers Guild something you would recommend for someone just starting out, or do they only accept professionals? And the answer to that is, the Bread Bakers Guild is for anyone who's serious about bread baking, amateur or professional. Totally recommend it. Some of the most interesting folks, in the guild are what we call serious home bakers, that are, some of them are taking a real scientific approach to bread baking well beyond, anything that some pros are doing. So, whether you've signed lease papers or not, if you're into bread, the Bread Bakers Guild of America, is certainly something to check out. And I hope to see you on the guild role soon, Glenda. So, way to go. Thanks so much for writing in. So that was some really nice emails there. And keep them coming, please. I've got some ideas in the future about how to even get more interaction with folks that are listening in to the show. But in the meantime, by all means, reach out, Mark, M-A-R-K, at riseuppod.com. We'll get email sent straight to me. I love to hear from folks. I love to hear what you like and maybe what you don't like, or what we can do better with the show, that kind of thing. Because this is episode 30, and there's still lots to learn, you know, even though I've done 30 of these things now, which is crazy for me to think about. There's still, we can go in a lot of different directions here. And so I'd love to hear what you think. So reach out for sure. So enough of my yakking for today. Hope you like the update. Let's get talking with Jesse at Polestar Hearth in Guelph, Ontario. Just to set the scene a bit, Jesse has this beautiful little bakery that's on one of the main streets. It's sort of a, I'll call it a tiny little strip mall, like two bays in there, but there's parking in front. But when you walk in, the bread is right in front of you. The counter's off to the right. And then he has this gorgeous little table with two chairs right by the door. And so we were set up right by the door, coming into the bakery, on this, vintage mid 20th century table with a couple chairs and two mics and a recorder. So, you'll get a sense of it, through the conversation, but just to give you the heads up that, we're kind of out in the middle of the action, as customers were coming in, but, it sounds great. And I think you get a sense of the energy of his place. So here we go with Jesse Merrill from Polestar Hearth. That, ours would, I always seem to have some one person working the door while I was recording. You know, because we had two people anyways, right? And so okay. we were in usually, by the time the bread went in, there were three of us in the building, right? So, most of the time for the couple of seconds that we were loading, I just had someone, work the door and I peel them in.
Right.
But that's...
I'm pretty slick with it myself now. I can hold the door sort of halfway open, slide it in, and close, and there's no steam loss. But some of the other guys are a little slower, and sometimes that's, I'm like, get that in there quick, close the door, I want that steam.
It's not infinite steam either. But the bread looks amazing.
Well, thank
like, you. The, you know, we've been traveling, what have we been, 10 days now? 2 weeks? We've been traveling 2 weeks. And we went around Lake Superior and out to Ottawa and then down And this was our shoulders went down when we came in this morning. It was like, oh,
bread.
Oh, bread. And just the layout and the front window, you know, from the display case to the front window ledge to the, to the bags of flour by the door on the cart and stuff.
I'm glad you see that.
Yeah, oh, no.
It was a big process making this place.
Yeah. How long have you been here?
This has been, shall we just start this
thing? Sure, yeah, we'll just go. For sure.
We opened a week before Christmas, a year and a half ago.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it hasn't been that long.
So not long at all.
Yeah.
But there were already, I guess, 8-9 years of home baking.
Sure.
Like I had a big wood-fired oven and a garage turned into a bakery.
Yeah, yeah.
So we did subscription CSB thing for all those years and some wholesale. And so this is all just built on that platform. So when I opened, there was actually a business.
Oh, good.
There was actually an understanding of who we were and what we did.
Yeah, that's kind of how I got my start, too. It was maybe a smaller scale because I only did it for about a year and a half before we opened our place. But having those customers ready to come that first day makes all the difference.
Yeah. What was interesting was that we had very little contact with the Polish community. I didn't even know that they really existed here. And when we opened, Polish people were just flooding the place, so excited.
Oh, really?
And it was so beautiful, actually. We had so many wonderful interactions with these people who were coming in and remembering their grandparents and remembering their grandma's oven and their grandpa's wheat field that they had spent summers there, you know, and it was very, very touching. There was a lot of people that got quite literally very tearful when they came in.
Are you doing a lot of rye here? Or,
actually not. No, we're not doing the rye I would like to be doing.
Just a crusty loaf, right?
Yeah, any of it. I would like to do more rye. Right now, it's rye day is Friday, and that's the only day.
Okay, yeah.
We're still fighting that fight that anybody who cares about good rye is fighting in North America.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't just mean caraway, you know, on a dry, white, deli loaf. It's not that.
Yeah, we have this thing at home. They call it the Winnipeg-style rye, which is basically wheat bread with a couple of rye flakes in it. It's this light, squishy dough. And when I started making, I did a 40% rye every day, which is still, you know, by the purists, yeah, it's like, yeah, that's still wheat bread. But that was a learning curve for a lot of folks. Yep. It was like, what is this crusty, dense, you know, or what they would call a dense loaf, you know, and it's like, oh man, for a real rye, this is fluff. Oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We had a gentleman come in early on who grew up in Winnipeg,
yeah,
and he remembered one bakery's sprouted rye,
right,
in particular. Right. I don't know, is that a thing that you've run into?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, so yeah. Sounding like a pretty similar, like a fairly light loaf full of sprouts.
Right.
So we tinkered with that a bit,
yeah,
and have made a really, really nice loaf,
nice,
that way. So it's nice. A 50% rye plus plus the sprouts, the, yeah, sort of 3-day sprouts.
Yeah.
And gosh, that's some amazing bread.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Oh.
So we call it our Winnipeg sprouted rye.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're just putting the sprouts in whole, or do you grind,
yeah,
them?
Yeah. No, I don't grind them. We've been through various phases with that, thinking maybe it'd be,
yeah,
better for people's teeth to grind them, because,
yeah,
the outer ones do get a bit crusty. But,
yeah.
It just doesn't,
no,
it's not something we've done. Like, one thing, I don't want to release all those enzymes in there. I'm kind of scared of what that actually does,
yep,
when you do that.
Yeah, for sure. It just moves like crazy. I was sprouting wheat and then grinding it.
Right.
Because when I went to SFBI, that's what we did for one experiment, right? So I said, okay, so I bought a meat grinder attachment for the Hobart and, okay, ran it through. And it makes a heck of a mess.
Yeah.
Just a heck of a mess. And then it's so sweet. Like it,
right,
just, you know, it's just, and, yep, so everything just
almost cloying sweet.
It's,
isn't it?
It's awesome, but you start wondering what you've put into it, you know. Yeah.
And it moves fast.
Yeah.
Right?
But that's so neat. That's so cool with like the having the Polish folks come and that community kind of spring up.
It's really, really, it's heartwarming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Early on I remember one conversation I had at a wholesale, at a health food store where we,
yep,
wholesale, where a gentleman stopped me on the way in.
Yeah.
Very, very French.
Yeah.
Older man, dapper as heck.
Yeah.
Yep. Calling tweeds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And stopped me to tell me that having discovered this bread finally made him able to feel at home.
Oh.
That he could stay here,
true,
after 17 years.
My,
he could,
gosh,
finally,
yeah,
I think I can stay in Canada now. Yeah. And that was sort of indicative of a whole bunch of relationships that we built with old,
yeah,
older European people who knew that, and even who would say, you know, when I go home now, it's not there anymore.
Wow.
You know, we go to Poland or we go to France,
yeah,
and it's really hard to find the bread, and then we want to come home.
Yeah.
You know, we want to come home to here.
Yeah.
And that's really heartwarming.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. I bet, like, I don't know the story at Guelph, because I just got here. I'm going to ask you about that. But, like, I know in Regina, you have, like, I grew up there, and so there's this sense of who the people are in the city. And then when you open the bakery, you realize there's a whole other community
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
Around the university and around the, you know, first generation immigrants, sort of the Eastern European thing, which is actually my story, but it's like I'm third generation, and so it's been forgotten, you know.
Yeah.
And you see the guys with the heavy accents, and it's like they're they're literally in heaven. And I saw that superseded, right? We do. I'm assuming something similar, but we call it birdseed bread.
Okay.
And I've got a customer that when she goes to Calgary, she's got Polish friends. She takes like 8 loaves with her.
Yes.
Like to this day, she does that all the time, and it's like, you know, I know either when they're in visiting or when Loretta's going out because of the orders. It's so
nice.
Cool. Yeah, it's just really, yeah, neat. It's really neat. So a year and a half here doing the retail thing. And what was the how was that like for sort of emotionally making that leap to say, okay, we're really going to do this?
It's hard to describe. It was, of course, one of those things that you might not have taken on if you knew what it,
yeah,
would have been,
uh-huh,
to get there. It was also sort of inevitable. I had actually had my eyes on this building all along as one of the very few places that I could do that. We live just 2 blocks from here, just around the
so
corner.
So nice, yeah.
So I'm able to be, hey man, in and out, mm-hmm, wherever I need to be, whenever I need to be.
Yeah.
And my family too.
Okay.
Small children.
Okay.
And it I had left a note for the landlord here some 10 years ago, just saying, you know, if you ever decide to turn this over, let me know. It was a very kind of low class laundromat. Like,
okay, yeah, I was going to ask.
Just you. About exactly half the machines worked, and like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And he showed up at my house, saying, we're thinking of turning this over. The lease is coming up. Yeah. Are you still interested? And then it felt kind of inevitable. It's
sure.
like you're on that toboggan, and
sure. yeah.
there you go.
Yeah.
And I'm not at all sorry. It's a wonderful thing that we have here. And one of the things that I really felt like made it a good plan, a good idea, was that I knew that we could support a bunch more skilled people.
Okay.
And serve a wider community than
sure.
we were serving with the very, you know, like two people working and,
sure.
and a subscription based
sure.
sales. And so that felt like a little bit of a social, a good thing for my city.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we actually then, it's amazingly difficult to get money for mm-hmm. a food-based,
yep.
Food-based project.
Yeah.
So, you know, the credit unions didn't want to deal with
yep.
me at all.
Which is so interesting, isn't it? Because I had the same experience.
Yeah.
And you think, well, I want to work with a credit union.
Yeah.
And the money's
yeah.
in the community and stuff. And they were like, uh-uh.
No, man.
They might be your customer after you open, but they're not giving you the money for it.
It's very funny. Anyway, so what we did was just put out there that we were doing this
uh-huh.
and we're looking for loans.
Oh, okay.
Small loans from
okay.
the community. And that's how we built it.
Wow.
So that paid for most of what had to
yeah.
be shelled out, you know,
yeah.
up front.
Yeah.
I leased the oven.
Oh, okay.
I leased the sheeter. I already had a sort of mid-small spiral mixer.
Yeah.
And I had $10,000 and my time
yeah,
put
yeah.
into it.
Yeah.
So everything here was me.
Yeah.
This floor,
yep.
the
yep.
timbers, the, you know.
I hear you. Yeah.
My dad did
which,
most of
which
the painting.
Which was awesome, by the way. Like the.
Thank you.
The,
thank you. Yeah. We got those milled
so nice.
By the Old Order Mennonites.
Oh, nice.
And then my dad actually hand planed all those.
Wow.
And we built that together. That was a real special.
So great.
Thing. Yeah.
So great. This is one thing that I'd never be able to get away with that you've got is just having the bread out with the bags and folks can bag.
Well, it's
themselves.
A very interesting thing about health.
Yeah.
Health rules. They're very vague.
Yes.
And they're
yep.
completely up to the way that your individual health inspector reads
yep.
those rules.
Yep.
We have a great health inspector who's very interested in local food
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
in what we're
yeah.
doing. And she has made it okay for us to have it that way.
Nice.
I'm sure that a different health inspector would see it quite differently.
Yeah.
And I know that like 20 minutes up the road, there's a Laura Bread and they weren't allowed to do this.
Wow.
But then so many of the grocery stores have open bread.
Sure. Sure.
And I would fight it.
Yeah.
I would definitely
yeah.
fight it.
Yeah.
However, we do have Plan B, which would be to move the counter in front of
sure.
it, and it would work out.
Sure. Yeah. 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 Which is essentially what we did. Like,
yeah.
there was, but it's the same. It's funny how a good health inspector and a good attitude when you're talking with them helps. And then also, we had set it up that way. And so we had set it up with the counter in front and the bread behind, but still like open and, you know, open to the air and that, because I wasn't going to compromise on the crust, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And it went okay, but you sort of have to be confident, but how do I say confident in your position, but willing to learn at the same time. So confident and curious, I guess, is maybe
yeah,
the
sure.
thing. And we did all right as well. But I heard you hear those stories a ton with guys fighting and that. But
oh,
it aesthetically is great. And I've been watching people come in and they're just, it's like a magnet. It's like, oh
yeah. Yeah.
They're like running towards it, you know?
Well, and also many, many people there are three main kinds of people. There's people who like the bread really light,
yeah.
people who like the bread really dark, and the people who've never noticed.
Yeah.
And they get they each go to their own.
They get to pick their own. That's that's smart too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, cool. And so you built out, you had mentioned, you know, the ability to engage more skilled people now if you go bigger. What was that like to find people to work with you?
There's a lot of people out there that want to do this.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see that, actually.
Yeah.
I was quite isolated. I'm self-taught.
Right. Sure.
And quite isolated in my own little bakery.
Right.
You know, and
right.
when you're a baker, you don't have time to go to visit other bakeries.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well,
that time of day.
I was going to ask you about that, too. If you did you do a tour before?
Yeah. No, not really, you know. So, really, everything that's here is kind of I guess I didn't know the rules, so
sure.
I broke them.
Sure.
In a lot of different ways. And I think that's part of what's really good about it.
Yeah.
It's also why it took so long to do. And,
okay.
you know, there are much more efficient ways and you don't need to reinvent every wheel, right?
Yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah, yeah.
But
sure.
if you do, you get a different kind of wheel than everybody
yeah.
else has
yeah.
been using. And that's one of the things that stands apart here. In terms of finding people, right now, we have a pretty good engine with that for, you know, we put out word that we want people.
Right.
And sometimes it's actually too many resumes to
oh,
really
wow.
deal with. And I sometimes feel bad. I'm not answering everybody.
Right.
But initially, I got really lucky and found early on one woman
yeah.
Who is very, very capable.
Mm-hmm.
Has lots of experience and is good with people.
Oh, nice.
Really, really good with people.
Nice.
So I'm able to have somebody who can run the place
yeah.
without me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then it takes various other skill levels. You have to have
right.
people in all stages of that ladder to keep it.
Interesting
going.
For everybody. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. And what I've learned, of course, is that turnover is there all the time.
Yeah. So you've experienced that even in the year and a half?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah. People management and people, you know, finding and mm-hmm. everything is a huge, huge job.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And we're not in a huge pool here, you know.
Sure.
It's a small city
sure.
and it's away from Toronto where,
right.
you know, most of those people would gravitate towards.
Yeah.
But it's really amazing to be able to do this here because we're doing, you know, as good bread, I'm absolutely certain, as anybody in
sure.
the big cities,
sure.
you know. So
yeah.
it makes us all fortunate.
Oh, yeah.
yeah. And
yeah.
so for people that don't want to move far to get a good job, yeah. here we are. Well, there's 10 people, 10 paychecks I'm signing right now.
Wow,
so.
Good for you. Wow. yeah, that's... Yeah, that's right where my place was, and
okay.
So I can
so
relate.
You know that
yeah.
volume, yeah.
Yeah, I think we peaked at 13, but that was just because we had so many part time staff in the front,
right?
That
yeah, and that happens for sure,
yeah,
for sure.
But,
and it's I don't know how much you could do inside these walls. And I guess you could run 24/7, but I'm not really into that.
No. Well, and so what are your shifts like for your bakers? What kind of hours are they running?
It's kind of all over the map.
Yeah.
We just wrote a new schedule yesterday to
okay.
try where some people are doing 5 hours, some people are doing 12 yeah. hours, some people are doing 6 hours. It depends on what
okay.
we can
yeah.
get and put where.
Yeah.
You know, ideally, we would have people working 30 to 40
sure.
hours a week
sure. yeah.
And at a good return, but... There's a lot of growing pains around that. It really
yeah.
is no
yeah,
question.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they'll ever end. Hey, guys, enjoy.
Yeah. No, for sure. Well, and for your production schedule, how early are they getting going?
During the week, it's not bad. It's like 5:30.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
Weekend, I'm doing the baking myself.
Okay.
And see, we're only open 5 days right now.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So that's 6 days of work.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I do an early shift, a sort of 3:30, 4 o'clock shift
gotcha.
On Saturday. But
gotcha.
None of the bread production is actually at that time. Like it's all. Toby starts mixing dough around 9 o'clock in the morning. So,
okay. 9 o'clock for the next day.
For shaping this afternoon.
Yeah.
So she's mixing up lots of dough right now,
yeah.
and then that will be shaped starting just after lunchtime.
Right.
And into the just after supper time, sort of,
yeah.
you know, anywhere from 6 to 8.
Yeah.
So most of the people's jobs are in really nice
yeah.
daylight
yeah.
times.
Yeah.
it's only the person who's actually doing the baking that sees those early hours.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Cause we were starting 4 during the week and 2:30 on Saturday. Same kind of thing, but we retarded some doughs in bulk, but we were mixing most of the bread doughs first thing when we came in,
and okay.
There's wow. baking off last thing, you know,
yeah.
but, we were,
we haven't gotten to that. Yeah. Everything is on the same schedule now. Yeah. So everything is overnight retarded.
Yeah.
There are times like we have a real, real hard time getting rye to last overnight
yeah.
in the retarder.
Yeah.
And we have started the discussion about
yeah.
baking them same day.
Yeah. Well, so I learned the rye bread that I bake all the time from Volker Baumann. He was the German fellow, but also at Sate in Calgary, sort of the head pastry and baking guy. Tons of experience. And he said the bread was like a lot of rye sour going in. And he said, so all the flavor is in that bucket of rye sour, so don't be afraid to yeast it and get it baked, right? So we ended up with a lot of, for that style of rye, it worked quite well.
Right.
But you could get it out.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to adding a little bit of yeast, but I actually don't find it necessary. It's so hard to hold the stuff back.
Yeah. Well, exactly. So we were like, you know, I think an hour and a half bulk, an hour.
Right.
An hour,
get that stuff in the oven.
Yeah,
I think we'll start doing that actually with our rye. We do that already with our Vollkornbrot,
yeah,
which we make on a Thursday. So we mix it Thursday morning, bake it all afternoon on Thursday afternoon. Like it bakes for whatever 3 or 4 hours, and then sets overnight, and we cut it until Friday.
Yeah,
but I think we're gonna start moving
more
of our rye over to that, because when rye is really nice, it's so nice, but when it's overproofed, it's so dry and horrible.
Oh, yeah.
And I just hate it.
No, for sure. Well, and I found with I saw the sign about baguettes and stuff, and it's like it just takes time to groove a schedule, and I totally get it where it's like until we get it figured out, we can add them back in. Well, that, it's going to take some time.
Yeah. And then really, quite honestly, the question is bigger than that too.
I mean,
for us in this environment, the baguettes have been almost a lost leader.
Yeah.
Such a high skills and, high man hours.
Yeah.
Thing
yeah.
that, you
and,
know, for
and,
the amount of oven space that they uh-huh. take up, which is twice as much as anything else. Uh-huh.
Twice
and
as much
also,
and
the Miwi
the
oven
and,
is 4x4. You'll remember that shape.
Yeah.
So unless you want to make short baguettes, you only get one row of them in there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So yours is actually deeper than mine, because mine was...
it's 4x4.
Mine was 3 across and only one pan deep.
Right.
But and so it was even. Like
that would make sense more than this.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Like unless you want to make... Well, it's 120 centimeters.
Yeah.
So unless you want to make sort of 50 centimeter... baguettes, you only get one row of them in there, and it's just lost time, and it's the highest heat, and we're also struggling in here. We don't have quite enough AC.
Yep.
So it's just one.
Yep.
So many things about it. It's like, it's really nice when you get them really nice, but also if they're not really nice, then who wants that baguette?
Yeah, who wants an average baguette?
Whereas we can really put our focus on this bread,
completely
keeping everything on the same kind of schedule.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, make really good bread
and really and really get it grooved and I know for me it was the same way. It was your I would look at that oven and I would say how many dollars worth of bread is in that oven right now?
Yeah, it's like $30.
Yeah, and it's like, and if I fill them up with country sourdough or something, it's like so much more. So, I know exactly what you
and
mean.
And with baguettes, I don't know if you found it to be true, but we certainly have that you can't shape them the night before. They have to be shaped
live
and go in the oven.
Yeah.
So that's just like, oh man, come on.
Even there, I ended up having to compromise with my pre-ferment because when we were doing pouliches, you never knew if I could never gauge the overnight temperature well enough.
Right.
So when you
you've been in exactly
places. So you're coming in 4 a.m. and it's either all
dead
over the
or
bench.
Beautiful.
It's either beautiful. It's all over the bench or it hasn't moved yet. And that's the last thing I wanted to worry about.
Well, it's great to talk to somebody who knows.
Oh,
that
God, yeah.
Because the public, so, it's funny too, because we get a lot of pushback on that. No baguettes. Yeah. You know how many baguettes we were selling in a day? During the week, we were selling 9 baguettes.
Yeah. And
come on.
And you can't sell a payold. So, yeah. Like, it's pure waste. Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. That's
the, well, I mean, we sell a ton on the weekend, yeah. But during the week, nobody wants yeah. them. So, I don't know what the big pushback is all about.
We closed at 6, the same as you. And I had a woman come in, the local food critic, our second week. And it's like, well, why aren't you doing extra baguettes right at 5 o'clock for people for on their way home? I said, first off, who comes? Like, after 4 o'clock, we were dead.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I said, like, so I'm going to keep a baker around? Like, they've all gone home by noon. Like, I can't get my front staff to bake baguettes for you. So it was – so when – You got to work in with the constraints you have. And like, I used to be frustrated by that I wasn't the, I wasn't like, oh, well, so-and-so in California does it this way and I want to be like them or somebody I visited in Edmonton. And then you find you have your own constraints and, do the best, make that, there's a saying like make them beautiful constraints, right? And see them as an advantage. And because it says our place is unique that way, and there you go. You know, it took me.
So, how much bread were you baking?
Oh man. Well, we were only doing retail. Like, I only took a couple of loaves to an organic grocer twice a week or something like that. So, I would say, 150 loaves on a weekday, and 250 something like that on a weekend, and then we were doing. Cookies and muffins and croissants and danishes like you're doing and the cookies and muffins and or the sweet side of things ended up being about a third of the business by the time we were done. Like it was an afterthought. It was a have a cookie with your bread kind of thought.
Yeah, yeah.
And then people started ordering 2 dozen cookies and we realized, ooh, there's something
you
here.
You sell a lot of cookies.
Yeah. And we did it all out of the MeWe, right? We did it all out of that deck oven. Yeah. So it was like first thing in the morning, like we're baking all the low temperature stuff and then slowly raising the temps for the bread. And
I actually dedicate the bottom deck pretty much exclusively to pastry and cookies.
Yeah.
Which means that the bread process can be really slow, cooking out of only 2 decks,
which
can hold 24 loaves each.
It's a real supply chain.
It is. It's a bottleneck.
A logistics nightmare, yeah.
Yeah. But the cookies, I think that stuff is maybe 20% of what we're doing.
Yeah.
Approximately. And we're doing right now in around 250 on a weekday of loaves.
Nice.
And 450 on a Saturday.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a long Saturday for sure then.
Oh, it's a lot of baking.
A lot of baking.
Decks,
it is.
It's from... Well, it'd be say from 4 until 11 or noon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Cause we would go by the end of it, I haven't really done the numbers for a long time, but I remember we would do, the middle 2 decks would start with bread about 6 in the morning and go straight through till noon. And then we'd eventually get the top and bottom decks going to bread as well. Sort of in those slots.
Get finished
off. But because we'd end up, we would do 4 rounds of, or 2 full bakes of our birdseed bread. So that'd be about 72 loaves. Mm-hmm. And about 70 baguettes and about, 40 sourdough or whatever. Yeah, so it adds up, I guess.
Yeah, so we've just bought a new mixer.
Yeah.
Which takes us into a much more easy flexibility around our batch sizes.
Right.
Because for a long time we were sort of capped at 55 or 60 loaves in the small mixer.
Gotcha.
Whereas we needed, say 70, 75, and then it turns that into 2 small mixes.
Yeah, which
so
is...
It is a step forward to have a mixer that's big enough
for
the job. For all those other years beforehand, that other mixer was perfectly sized. It was sized very nicely to what one person could shape at the bench that we had that fed into the, we had a very small homemade retarder in a closet that held 2 racks and then feeding the brick oven.
Yeah.
It was all very nicely sized together by accident.
Yeah.
And here finding those sizes and flow is of course a much bigger thing. And As it is, though, I mean, our retarder, our walk-in is so full on Saturday morning.
Yep.
It's like, ooh.
Yeah. Yep. The bottleneck keeps moving, right? Yeah. You know, you'll get your oven figured out, and then it'll be the refrigeration or something.
Absolutely.
And it just kind of keeps
cycling. Oh, well, Monday I had the oven fixing guys and the refrigeration fixing guys. Oh, and, you know,
yeah.
All that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess being closer to Toronto, you can have access to some repair guys that might know what they're doing a bit, eh? Or
I mean, the MeWe guys, I guess, are only 45 or an hour away. I don't know if they know what they're doing or not. We've been through some real issues with that oven. You know, I don't need to speak about them here, but that oven has had issues.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. That's cool. Well, no, it's neat. So you're doing wholesale as well?
Yeah, we do. We do not a lot of restaurant.
Right.
I don't court restaurant work.
Yeah.
There are a few caterers that come on a casual basis.
Yeah.
And then we have one big wholesale account in town. One out of town that we actually sell a par-baked loaf to.
Okay.
Frozen.
Yeah.
And then a few smaller wholesale accounts.
Oh, wow.
So, I don't know, sort of $2,000 a week worth of
wholesale. Oh, wow. Okay.
Wholesale.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would say it's probably in the, it's still a fraction of what we're doing.
Sure.
What we have done that I think other people might want to know about is that the wholesale typically, not the par-baked stuff,
right,
but the in-town wholesale is a consignment-based model. So I'm in charge of how much bread is going there.
Right.
So it actually gives us a buffer on our day.
Yeah, yeah.
So if we get into the day and it looks like we're going to sell 124 loaves in here and we've made 150, then we can gauge how much to send out there.
Nice.
And they're flexible with that. And if we send too much, I bring them back and they're mine because they don't get charged for it. And it really made it so that the merchants were less conservative than they would have been on their own dime.
Sure.
So that was something I insisted on early on, is I'm going to own these and I'm going to say how many are coming. Mm-hmm. You give me X amount of shelf space and we'll do it that way.
Yeah.
And it worked brilliantly because it built it much faster than it was going to be built, again, under the merchant's, you know, sort of very conservative way of looking at things.
Sure.
And then two, we can boost it where we think there might be higher sales and, you know, on close to a holiday or whatever like that. So that actually has been a really good model for doing wholesale, because wholesale is weird, right?
Like,
and especially as a small producer, you just think, I don't even want anything to do with that. But quite honestly, it has been really helpful for us to have that buffer amount. I can overshoot in the bakery every single day and take some of it away again, and then we're good.
Well, and keep your oven full.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, exactly.
That's really smart. Like, that's really smart because, the number of days where you knew if you, like for me, like say a Wednesday was always my slow day. And it's like, if I fill the oven, I'm going to have so much left over. Like what? And then you know, why am I making 10 loaves of something?
Right. Exactly.
This is insane.
Exactly.
You know, it's sort of like,
So this has been very helpful. We don't take a wide selection.
Right.
We take, our sesame bread, which has seeds just on the outside. Yeah. It is, it's mostly a high extraction flour that we get from the Amish. And it has a cracked rye soaker in it.
Nice.
Really lovely bread.
Yeah.
Sort of under, it's one that people don't try right off, but if you get there, it's one of our best, I gotta say. So we take that, our country bread, which again is actually a large portion of high extraction flour.
Sure.
We don't make white bread.
Yeah.
We call it white, but it's no wonder bread. Then the super seed, which has toasted seeds in it.
Oh, nice.
So all the seeds, sunflower and sesame are toasted in it, and poppy and flaxseed in there. That makes a huge difference, toasting those.
Yeah.
And then our spelt bread, which I find, I mean, I haven't traveled the whole wide world, but it's the best spelt bread I've ever had.
Nice.
And again, it has that rye soaker in it, a cracked rye. It has a, and flaxseed. So keeping that moisture in there in a way that spelt has a hard time with. And we bake that one in what we call a scotch block, the big wooden frame.
Right.
10 in a gang in there. And it's quite a unique bread.
Yeah.
So it comes out rectangular with torn sides.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And nobody else, you know, makes bread like that.
For sure.
It's pretty cool.
It's visually stunning. I saw the frame over on the side with some of the bread in it. I'm kind of looking like it reminded me I was at a bakery in Spain a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And they had the biggest rye loaf I've ever seen, and they sold it by the slice.
Awesome.
And it was infused with orange because I was in the south of Spain. So there was, it was like an orange rye. And, Cindy likes toast in the morning, and the pieces were so big that we stuck the end in the toaster. And it was like 10% went in, you know. I bought three slices, and I think it lasted us a week because there was so much bread there.
Wow.
But it was that same kind of thing. You just take it off the end, or the way you're breaking it apart.
That's cool.
Folks buy with their eyes too, right? Like it really
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely. Actually, everybody likes that one because it has a star on top. I want the one with the star.
Yeah.
So there it is.
Yeah. We did a sprout, you know, we did a sprouted loaf, and we called it power bread. And just put like a little lightning bolt stencil on top.
Oh, yeah, awesome.
Boy, that flew.
I'll bet.
You know?
That's
and
awesome.
I was like, no, I
might
don't
steal
know.
That.
I don't know. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't, I'm willing to bet I didn't invent it.
Yeah.
I don't know where we got the idea, but for sure.
Yeah.
So
I got the idea actually for the wooden block from my friend Dave Applin at Cliffside Hearth in Toronto, in Scarborough.
Yeah.
And he had found it, I think, in an old Scottish baking manual. And later on, I found that we had older Scottish people come in and say, "Oh, I remember that bread.
That's so cool."
Of course, it was big white fluffy bread
for
them, but baked in that gang like that in a wooden frame.
Yeah. That's so cool. That that recognition. That every time I hear one of those stories, it blows my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
So and where do you get your flour from here? Like, what's the scene like?
Oh, you know, we have so many flour suppliers.
Yeah.
It's one of the banes of the whole existence is that I'm always ordering flour from one person or another and forgetting to order it from the next person.
Dear.
Like that. We have a good portion, probably 40% of all our flour comes from the old order.
Okay.
There's a collective. So they've built a huge off-grid stone grinding mill.
Really?
In the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
Really in the middle of farm country. I think they didn't build it with a plan of how they were going to get that flour anywhere because they are completely horse-powered people.
Yeah.
Luckily, it turns out that they have New Order Mennonite neighbors who had a refrigerator truck running and going in various directions with meat and eggs and syrup and honey, I guess. And so they've sort of made a collective out of that.
Right.
The whole thing is a collective, actually. It's quite interesting. I mean, they do eggs that are small flock eggs.
Yeah, yeah.
And very obviously, if you know eggs at all, they're from orchard-raised hens. They're just probably only 100 on a farm.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's great, and we pay premium for that.
Yeah.
But so that's certified organic and local and wonderful, and they mill it to our specs. And then
what's the name of that?
Hoffnung.
Hoffnung. Okay.
Yeah, so it means hope in the old German language. And they is it true? Yes, all the wheat we get from them we get partially sifted, so high extraction in baker's terms. And what else do we get? We use some Milanese flour from Quebec.
Okay.
And we use a couple other white flours.
Yeah.
And occasionally we use K2 for a couple things. And what else have we got? I don't know. We got lots of flour going
on. Yeah, but you've got some. You've got
it's
some
like one person makes nice rye and one person makes nice wheat. And it's all about different milling things. And right where we're sitting, I almost sprung a month ago for one of those beautiful German wooden mills to put here because my supply of organic cracked rye dried up all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I always kind of like the idea of having a mill in here, but finding that the mill size that I would need would actually probably be effectively too loud and too dusty for this environment.
Yeah, you'd need it.
Which is a drag. Because you know the ones I'm talking about, right? The Osterroller mills with the whole wooden case and the sifters. And beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Not cheap, but beautiful.
No. Well, and I got to try one of those New American mills, one of Andrew's mills.
Nice.
And they're gorgeous, but the small one's still pretty big.
Like yes, I talked to him, and he's, 26 is the smallest, and I don't need any more than 20.
No. And it's like, and then, and you kind of almost need like a mill room at that point, because you're like, it gets dusty and it gets loud, and you've got, it's like the, there's a school of thought that having this lovely open area here is a cost, but then it's also, now that it's built out and it looks so great, it's also an asset too, right?
It absolutely is. And it's interesting. We've had equipment merchant come in from Montreal saying, well, you just need to push that counter up here. All you need is 6 feet in front of it and they can line up out the door. That's how we do it in Montreal. And well, it's not how we do it here.
Because
people actually come into this space and go, I like to be here.
Yeah. You know? The heart rates drop and it's good.
Yeah.
And there's good art on the walls and you know, just even that window ledge is just,
I'm glad you noticed.
It totally is.
Took me a week to build.
Totally is. when we picked our place, it was for the windows.
Okay.
Even though we never did get seats, we always had this dream of a high counter in front of the windows.
My plan was a sort of oval shaped table. It hasn't happened yet either. But
you know what? It'll come.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice. So what is your sort of thought for the future? Is it groove your systems or is it double down? I don't know.
Well,
or are you in a happy place? I guess
the plan. Okay. Well, for one thing, you know, businesses have this, or the business world has this odd idea that if you're not growing, you're dying. And I hate that.
Yeah.
I really stand against that.
Yeah.
I really don't think the world should work that way.
Uh-huh.
So we're looking, of course, for not quite a plateau, but a happy place where you have the right number of employees, working the right number of hours, serving the right amount of bread to the right number of people. Hype you. And that, I guess it is a moving target.
Sure.
For sure. But we also have these four walls. So the plan... Bye, Mom.
Oh, that's your mom? Oh, cool.
Yeah. The plan is to not sort of stick our elbows through the walls here.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there are other days in the week that we're not using. That would be one option if we needed to grow.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
No, for sure.
I don't know what the larger answer is. I would like to make this as big as serves the community well and where my stress level is not exploding. We get people coming in all the time. Please, please move to Oakville. Please open one in Waterloo. Please franchise this thing.
Yeah.
You have no idea how much even... You know how much individual creative output is in each loaf that's on this wall. You know, like you don't. This isn't franchisable in that sense.
No. Well, you know what? When I was at Wheatstock, I was in a class with a guy from Cobb's Bread. Do you have Cobb's?
We have one that opened about 6 months ago.
Oh, did it? Okay. They were really good. They opened 3 blocks from our place after we were 3 years in. It was like, you guys. But
did it do anything to you?
No. Other than raise my stress level 300% because my customers would go and say, well, we tried it, but like, no, we're back here, right? So it didn't affect business. It just
I don't know where your story is going.
I think it shone a light on my own insecurities, put it that way.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. My experience was similar. For the first sort of 48 hours that I heard that, I was like, oh man, not cool, man.
Yeah.
Get
exactly.
your franchise out of here.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, there hasn't been a blip on our radar. In fact, we're still in a 20% growth rate going on here, and I don't know what they're doing down
because
there.
Because the guys that are going to go to the franchise, it's a step up for them, not a step down, right? You know, that's like nobody's coming in here saying, well, I wish it was a little bit less.
The only issue really is that Guelph has grown a lot in the last few years, and it has this sort of donut of of a different part of Guelph. I guess we'll say that now. And it is a long trip across town now.
And
it can take you 40 minutes to get to the south end of here, which is really weird for a town that I still think of as sort of 60,000 people. You know?
Right, but, right.
There it is. Cops can happily do what they want. The only thing that I fight for, the only thing that has frustrated me about them is that what they do, which I suppose is typical of any business opening with a large capital behind it, is they make way too much bread.
Right.
Way too much. And so we used to take, you know, if we had a failed batch, which you have, right? Like things happen, something like that. We'd take it to the soup kitchens and to the drop-in centers like that. And shortly after Cobb's opened, they weren't taking any more bread because Cobb's was sending it daily. They're baking, they're open like, I don't know, 24 hours a day or something?
They're open a lot.
And baking way too much bread.
That's really interesting because the I did have a similar experience. We had five charities. We had a charity a day that would take all our day olds.
Okay,
right. So Chili for Children was Wednesday, and this church program was Friday. Yep. That kind of thing. And and I found that all of the larger charities that would come every once in a while, just never bothered anymore. They were just getting a truckload, you know.
But, so that's the Cobb's model, is just to bake way too much and have everything on the wall all the time.
Well, and the point I was making about that sort of franchisability is, you know, we were taking a pretty advanced bread class from Mac McDonald at Wheatstock. And I asked the guy at a coffee break, I said, so what can you do with this? You know, and he said, unfortunately, he said, not much because I have to dumb it down. I think that was the exact quote, but he said basically you had to bring it down to a level that people at every store in a wide variety of skill levels could do. And so they were right away limited. And to be fair to them, I was at a different class years back with somebody from a larger grocery store, and we were making, it was a Didier Rosada class. And so we were making a ton of really fancy stencils and beautiful scoring and that. And they said, we're doing 1,500 pounds a day. I don't have time to score every loaf like this, right? And so, you know, there are advantages to being small as well. And I've got to find a better way to ask that question because it always comes across as growth, and that's not necessarily the case. In my case, I needed to grow a little. I never got to the point with my bakery where I could – not work, but there was only one period about 6 months where I didn't have to work a baking shift because I had the staff in place and could afford them.
I'm only a few weeks into being let up from all the baking shifts. I mean, that was the one place that I held my my artistic I don't know what the word would be, stranglehold, on the whole thing. It took a long time to train and trust and everything like that. Somebody who could do. And I now look at this and go, I wouldn't have baked it any better.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm really, really glad for that young man who's done that.
Yeah. And it speaks well of your baker, and it speaks well of you that's able to happen.
Yeah.
You know,
because you
can get in the way of that as well.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm living
my
proof.
Life was imploding, really. Like, it's no way to live.
Yeah.
It's no way to live under that stressful stress and doing all the early shifts and all of that stuff.
And then try and be here for customers. And
try to be there for my family.
Yeah. And how old are your kids now?
One just walked out. She's 19.
Okay.
And she has been working here this summer, and she's off to chef school in a week.
Yay, nice.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And then I have a 13 and a 9.
Oh, okay.
And so they're spanning all those ages where they need different kinds of input from you.
Yeah.
And that's great. Yeah. But, you know, for years, this thing has, absorb every creative thing that
sure,
I could put.
So, sure.
So music and art and all those other things have dropped by the wayside for me to just give creative energy to this.
Yes.
And now I'm
yes.
just waking up from that sort of Rip Van Winkle sleep, yeah. you know, where it's like, oh, I used to do that. Oh, cool.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, well, yeah, because when you're right in the thick of it, sitting down and reading a book just puts you to sleep, and that's the end of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
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 That would be nice.
Yeah, you're 2 blocks away. We were a 5-minute drive away, but still okay. very 40 minute walk, very close. And yeah, by the time I got home, sometimes it was just like, I'm glad I've done this road 100 times.
Yeah.
Because you're almost nodding off. Yeah. It's pure autopilot. So. Oh no, that's great. That's I'm really happy for it.
Thank you, Mark. You seem
to be in a good spot, especially for like a year and a half in. My goodness, like that's great.
Yeah, you know, so that is, of course, depends on how you count it. Either that or 11 years.
Yes.
In.
Yeah. So. No, for sure, and that's well said.
It is a place where my role is shifting. And,
yeah.
And I'm looking forward to that. And I'm shifting that role, you know, as hard as I can to get to a place where I can keep doing this for a few more years. Because right now I'm on a 10-year plan.
Yeah.
Good for you. Right now I tell myself, I tell the world that I would like to see me pretty much disengaged from this in 10 years. Whether that means that it moves on as a workers' co-op or I sell it or give it to my kids, or maybe it depends on who wants what. But and it also, of course, will depend on what goes on with the landlord, because I don't own this building.
Yeah.
But
that's smart. No, it's smart. You know, that's an outlook that I didn't have.
Right.
Which I was always, am I a baker or am I a business owner? And it seemed that that changed throughout the year, like a seasonal cycle, which wasn't good for anybody. So,
interesting.
Yeah. So that's really smart, because it's the,
Well, I'll tell you what I am now. I don't know if I'm a business owner or a baker. Yeah. I am the odd jobs guy.
There you go. Yeah.
I am the guy who's, you know, coordinating plumbers and, fixing little things here and there and fixing machines. Mm-hmm. And that's actually who I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here. Yeah. Or troubleshooting problem.
Are you in the middle of an interview?
Yeah, we are. But can I answer a question for you?
I was going to say to you, you were in canning recently. Yeah. Last year, was it Canning, Nova Scotia?
I was in Nova Scotia this summer, indeed, yeah.
Our place is about half an hour, or no, 15 minutes from Canning.
Wonderful. In what direction?
On the bay.
Oh, wonderful. I love that spot. Can I have it?
No, but I'd love to talk to you about it sometime.
I would.
At a better time.
It was my first time in Nova Scotia, and it was really hard to leave knowing that I could almost own a farm on the ocean there.
I go there every year. My late wife was from there.
Okay.
We've got a log cabin.
Wonderful.
Oh. So sometimes I'll drop in when you're not.
I'd love to hear more about it. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, thanks.
Oh, man, Nova Scotia's the best.
Oh, it's so hard.
And you're right, too, eh? We're out here thinking, you know, this is Saskatchewan's got just such brutal winters, and I've lived there my whole life.
Yeah,
and it's just that they're also so long. Not only are they cold, they're weight. They're like
half pretty long here, too. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's like an eight-month winter here.
So we've been looking at, like, you know, what about Southern Ontario? Or we always thought Victoria was always the place where we were going to go. But
Nova Scotia, man.
Nova Scotia's sweet.
Yeah,
and you're right. That was the one place that I've traveled where I said, we could actually afford this.
Yeah.
You know?
Even on the rich side, like we also were over on the Chester side.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
Oh yeah.
So beautiful. And you could buy a place there and it would have acres and some wood and a ocean view.
Uh-huh. Make sure your house is far enough inland. But
But I was literally up to my knees in the Bay of Fundy when I was getting a phone call from here saying AC's not working.
What is that? What is that? We were in year four and we took a trip, and my kids were working at the bakery too, right? So my daughter was in the back and my son was in the front. But all four of us went to Vancouver and Victoria and Seattle one summer. We did a little loop. And I swear to God, we got to Vancouver and I get a call from Tisha and it's like, air conditioner's out. And it's like, this is what we did. And I said, okay, here's the number to call. And it was, so we actually
closed this place for holidays. Like, we shut for 2 weeks and everybody's gone.
Good for you.
It's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
It's really the only way to do it. And everybody needs that. And that's the understanding when you get hired, that there are actually at least 3 weeks in the year that you're not working.
Yeah. Yeah. We did that, after New Year's. So the first 2 weeks of January.
Yeah.
And then we said, we'll try and give everybody a week in the summertime, because everybody likes a week in the summertime. And, but we stayed open in the summer, and that was difficult.
That's a hard way to run.
That was difficult.
No, bare bones.
Short one baker.
Yeah.
It was like, holy Dinah. That's so hard.
No, just shut the whole thing.
Yeah.
Big kill switch on the wall. You're done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the world has gotten used to that. Even when it was a home-based business, there was always that stretch in the summer and at Christmas again, where we didn't work. My wife's a teacher, so she has those times. So that we really tried to plan a little bit of time where my world wasn't absorbing everything.
Sure. Well, because it is. It just is. Like, that's all that's there. I'm glad you're seeing somewhere in the middle distance that opportunity to look at other things a bit again.
Yeah.
It's funny how it's a real issue.
It can really absorb everything, and it can absorb all your partner's energy and everything too. So.
Yeah. We were both in the bakery, so it was like doubly.
Yeah.
The fact that we're still together and better than ever is actually a bit of a small miracle.
Yeah, I think that's the only thing that's kept us together is that we're not both in the bakery. Although Kelly she'll come in Saturday morning and do some counter work and almost more just sort of schmooze with people.
And
that is really good too.
Yeah. Actually. But it's that sleep deprivation when both of you have it, that it's like, man, things get said. just because it's like, well, I can't form words, so I'm going to swear now.
That's awesome.
Oh, man. Awesome. Well, cool. And I just, one more question I wanted to ask you. Are you still doing subscriptions, or is that gone by the wayside? No?
No, that was a thing that morphed. In fact, when I started that, I'd never heard of it before.
Okay, sure.
I think we were, in practical terms, one of the first CSPs around. What year was that? 2008, something like that. And so the first model was, okay, so when I quit my job and I had a little tiny brick oven in the backyard that I could bake a dozen loaves in.
Yeah.
Quit my job to bake those dozen loaves.
Yeah.
And
what were you doing before?
My background is in musical instrument reconstruction.
Oh, really?
Construction.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So that was a whole other lifetime ago.
Yeah.
So on faith, quit that to become a baker. And the thing we did was deliver loaves right to people's doors.
Yeah.
You know, and I bought those customers.
Yeah.
And it was hard work, and it was way more than it was worth. But in terms of going to school, it was cheap. And so for first maybe year, 2 years, we delivered right to people's doors, and then we sort of went, you know what, it's got to be neighborhood depots. Yep. So we'd put a steel chest on to keep the squirrels out on somebody's, because so many squirrels, oh my goodness, the worst thing about it all, and put that on, you know, one porch in one neighborhood, and then the people would come there. And after we did that for a couple of years, we actually brought it all home, and everybody was coming to us to pick up on like 2 days a week. It was, you know, it was that kind of thing. And it worked very, very well in terms of buying customers and a low overhead and knowing how much bread to make and all that, all the reasons for a CSA or CSB were really ideal way to start a business and get a loyal following, particularly, as I said, you know, with delivering warm bread to people's doors, that there's still, those people still come, all these years later. And, then I thought that I would keep that kind of thing going as part of the backbone here. When we came to opening this, we tried for the first maybe 3 or 4 months to do that, and it just got way too top heavy.
Sure.
Managing a CSB is actually, bye-bye, have a nice day.
See ya.
Is a lot of work.
Yes.
You know, collating all those orders and making sure everybody got their name on the right bag and all that stuff was huge.
Yeah.
And the bookkeeping of it, oh my God, like I was so glad to see the end of that. And then It also caused kind of friction or confusion with other customers who would see that loaf and there weren't any here.
Can I have that one? And
this was going on, and finally we just said no. It also helped, you know, because of course that was part of what was going on there was we were giving people a real good deal. So it was like, we actually need to boost our return here to keep this brick and mortar going. And so we just made it straight across the board. Every now and then it creeps up in my mind and I think, well, maybe we should be one of those businesses that has a card model, you know, where you buy 10 loaves and get, or 12 and get one or something. We haven't done that. Mostly because we don't need to. It's a lot of work.
Well, and it changes the mindset for folks is what I, that's what I found. Well, that's how I've always thought of it. It's like the folks that are – my assumption is the folks that are coming here, price has nothing to do with it. So what can I do for them that – that? How can I – are there things that I can do that will make them feel good that isn't a discount? Like, why are we talking discounts? And that's – so that was more the mindset for me. Didn't figure it out completely, you know, like the main thing that we, well, we did a couple of things. We did like, we always had little kids cookies. So any kids would come in,
just have
the tiny little sugar cookies, you know, have a cookie and stuff. And that was good. And then we did promotions.
Keeping kids loyal is actually one of the biggest ones.
Well, we were next to a daycare. God. The kids were glued to it and the parents would have to come in. But the
I want to counter your earlier comment there, though. I find that our demographic is very broad. And that there are people who struggle to pay that $7. And there are people, there's sure a lot of fancy cars that drive into this parking lot, too. Hey, Edward. But... it's broad, and I like to keep it as broad as possible.
No, fair point. I didn't. I agree with you. I didn't want it to sound like it's an elitist.
It's more about loyalty.
And
that can be won in different ways. It could be won for sure with a smile and a nice warm contact with the person at the counter. A little bit of butter never hurts, and mostly just having people feel like they're part of something. Almost in a tribal kind of way, you know, just they know something in this town, or they have some attachment to this thing. You can create that many different ways.
That's a much better way of putting it. For sure. Absolutely. Oh my God. Yeah. No, I agree with you. It's, We tried to make we had a what was called our traveling bread basket giveaway that folks would enter and you could win a basket of bread, but then when your basket was empty you could give the bread or the basket to a friend and they would come in and we'd fill
that's
it up for
cool.
them again, you know, kind of keep
cool.
that traveling around and stuff. And so we always
say that again.
So what we did so in January was our anniversary of opening. So for 3 weeks we would take names. We would draw three names from the draw and they would win a free basket of bread. But then when the basket was empty and it was like an actual basket, they would give the basket to their best friend and they could bring it in, whoever it was, and we would fill it up. And so on and so on for the year, right? So we'd fill like 100 baskets in a year.
That's a cool idea. I like that.
Traveling and we called it the traveling baskets, right?
Yeah.
We keep track.
You had three of those going around.
We had three of them going around.
That's a lot of bread.
One would always get lost.
Right.
And so it's like they forget to bring it in. But yeah, so over the course of the year, it worked out about one a week. Or each basket would come back on average about once a week, and we'd fill it up again.
That's awesome.
Away you go. And so that was fun. And then we just tried to do something with every holiday, whether it was a Hallmark holiday or not. Like, here's your Mother's Day special baskets you can order and stuff. And there was a guy in Quebec, distributor, we would buy 100 of these baskets in this massive box and then figure out a way to fill them with something for Father's Day or something for Father's Day. And
I actually quite honestly tend to avoid most of the holidays.
Yeah.
But, you know, for one thing, like, you know, Easter is one of those. Like, everybody comes on with hot cross buns. Yep. And there's like, we don't have time to make hot cross buns. Like, actually, we don't have time to do it and make the bread that people want to. And,
what are you doing here?
We are recording a podcast. Yes, we are. Yeah, Baker's podcast. He's been traveling the country interviewing bakers.
And, Very
true. Ooh, thanks.
And what are you called?
It's called Rise Up. Rise Up, the Baker's podcast. Yeah. Yeah.
Rise Up doing something.
It's very famous, but for a very specific group of people. famous to the family, they call it. Yeah.
We were just in Bulgaria for 3 weeks.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow. Nice.
So eating the banitsa and
That's wonderful.
Cool.
Yeah. And we were invited for a dinner, and she made this absolutely amazing bread.
Yeah.
It was just, big round loaf of, you tear it apart.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so cool.
Tearing apart bread.
Yeah, yeah, that's magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
Sounds great.
So that was really fascinating. You know, when you grow up in a certain culture, you know, you eat certain foods, but then you go to the country and experience what they're doing there and experience the foods like on the ground.
Yes.
It's quite different.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that sounds great.
That's fortunate. Yeah, and in somebody's home is a whole other thing too, right?
Oh, that was really special. Wild mushroom soup.
Oh, goodness. My goodness.
Yeah.
Roasted peppers from her garden. And, you know, they eat the salad. They call it shopska salad. So, and they actually peel the tomatoes in the salad.
Really?
So, who does that? That's what they do.
Yeah.
It makes the salad have quite a different texture and flavor.
Sure. So cool.
Anyway, it was quite fascinating. We're always interested in food.
Yes.
You have to eat. You may as well eat well.
That's right. There you go.
Good. Enjoy. Where was I? I was on the subject of hot cross buns.
Oh, yeah.
And so we hummed and hawed, and we did them. The first year we did some, you can't make enough.
Nope.
Right? And then you get people who are actually upset because they didn't get them.
Yep.
So what we actually came to, which is, I think, another brilliant invention, was the not cross bun, where we would make a hot cross bun loaf, sourdough, exclusively. Really good bread.
Sure.
I don't know, about sort of 6-8 inches around, tied with a string to a knot. And it's, so it's the equivalent of, you know, half a dozen
hot cross buns
in one loaf that we could do that fast and bake them at a reasonable temperature and everything like that. And real hot seller, you know.
Nice. So,
but in general, because we're running almost open throttle, really, on weekends anyway, just about everything our system can handle, it's like, man, what can we really give you on a holiday? Like, I don't know. We'll go into a I say never use the word squash in any label for something, but we make a wonderful bread with butternut and cranberries and sage, that. And we'll do some of that, but you can never do enough of what people want at holidays. Sure. And that's quite a difficult position to be in. So it's almost like all or none sometimes. Yeah.
We took a lot of pre-orders and we worked all night.
Yeah.
It was like,
you make a party out of that.
You get tired of everyone, coming and picking up their, whether it's hot cross buns or braided challah or whatever. And saying, man, you look tired.
Yeah.
Are you going to get some sleep for Christmas? And it's like, that's all I'm going to do.
People really enjoy that stuff. People's favorite sort of insidious question is how early do you have to get up to
do?
They want to know that you are in pain for them.
Yes, yes. real blood went into this. Yeah. Our first Christmas Eve, we
enjoy you guys.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you. Our first Christmas Eve, we sold out, closed up, and went looking for something to go out for supper with the kids, and found the last restaurant in town just before they closed, like at 4 PM, you know, and had just an average meal.
Yeah.
you know, but left her a heck of a tip because they were still open. And it was like, and that was our Christmas, and then we slept. So it's so. Good. Yeah, yeah. But well, cool. Well, this has been just the best. It's been so much fun. Yeah. And I have to say, having everybody coming in and saying hi and, you know him by name and stuff is what it's all about. And that's an absolute joy. It's that reminder of why we put in the crazy hours.
Yeah, this
hours
was better than doing it over the internet, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, it truly is. And this is my dream. If I can edit this so people can hear what we're saying, and I think I can, is if I could travel and meet people where they are.
Yeah.
Would be
there's one young woman that has made a lifestyle of that for a couple of years now, Jen Violette, Baker.
She's the
connection to come here.
Yeah, she was on the show and she said, well, you got to come here. And it was like, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and she's still doing that. And it's amazing thing to do. It's not a life that I can do, but it's great.
She has a book there for sure.
Oh, yeah.
If she chooses to, she has got a book that'll sell like gangbusters because what a story. And especially the fact that, we're going around and we're camping where we can and stuff, right? But she was just finding wherever she could legally pitch a tent, and she was pitching it for a year and a half. It's like,
have you interviewed Tara Jensen?
I have tried. She's been awfully busy since her book came out.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, unfortunately, I think with Tara, she needs to write another book, and then there's incentive because she's just so darn busy. But she's one of the people that I find intriguing because every time I see an Instagram post or anything, it's like, you're doing that now too? Like that's
she has no children.
Yeah,
that's one.
Yeah. Well, and I reached out this summer, and she said, well, yes, except I'm drywalling my husband's house, she said. And then every third picture was, and also running a pie workshop and also doing this.
Crazy woman. Yeah.
No, she's
I love her.
You've met her?
I haven't met her, but we have a very nice relationship.
Yeah,
we definitely meet on that digital world.
Awesome.
A nice way.
Well, yeah. I'm gonna send her this one and say, hey, we can do this too.
Yeah, and it would be fun also to do some kind of a forum at some time. You know, if you had like half a dozen bakers,
a live panel. Yeah, no, that's a great idea. I think the next,
especially people who started, off the grid, like in a completely different way. Tara's definitely one of them with smoke signals. You know,
Well,
I don't know who
there's,
else.
There's
but,
been, it's been neat because I've been talking to folks that have gone sort of that traditional route that I didn't know about, like my friend Jim Williams found out, oh no, he baked like 15 years in California or whatever and then came and started this, so he was well experienced, and other folks like us that started on our own. And
For me, I think it was what made it possible for me to start at all was living in a bread vacuum.
Yeah.
And I used to feel quite frustrated by that. Like, well, how come I couldn't grow up in Vermont or Belgium or any place where there already was a bread culture.
Yeah.
And then I had to turn that around and go, you know what? That's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And now I'm the first person in this area to do that. And I can actually foster other people. So one of the other things that we're doing here is one of the young men that works for me who's just so good, such a quality, human being. I give him this place on Sundays and he makes pizza.
Nice.
And they make kick-ass pizza out of an oven that isn't being used on that day and under my name, but all he does is give me some pizza and that's a good deal. So I'm at a place where I can also foster forward and give forward what people have given to me. Yeah.
My buddy Byron in Victoria did that for a while where he had a really good pastry guy that eventually wanted his own pizza shop, I think is how the story went. But then, Sunday was pizza day.
Yeah.
And it was the pastry guy ran the whole
doing
show.
Doing that, And it's cash only and it has nothing to do with the business, but it's here.
But it's here. Sure. That's fantastic, man.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, it was great to meet you.
Thanks, Mark.
And thanks so much. This has been fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Safe travels.
Thanks. And there you go. That was Jesse. What a really, really nice guy. What a fella. Very generous person, generous with his time and very thoughtful about why he's doing what he's doing there, and what it means as a business, and what he means to the community, and that kind of thing. Absolutely loved the chat, and it was one of those that really makes me happy that I was able to sit across the table from him and talk, because it was so relaxed, and it was sort of what I dream of with these shows. It's, you know, two bakers sitting across the table talking to each other, sharing stories, me learning his story and sharing it with all of you. So they're a perfect encapsulation of what I'm trying to do with the show. Tara Jensen, hey, a little shout out to you. I hope you caught that. If you're listening, would love to get you on the show as well. And I'm going to use this as perhaps a teaser to get you out here to talk. And if you're hosting a conference and want to have a panel discussion, like Jesse suggested, I'm up for that. I'll come out and host that. We'll get some guys together and do a bit of a round table, or what they say up in Canada, you know, the hot stove league, you know, sitting around and sharing stories about the baking industry and our bakeries and our challenges and all of that. So I'm up for that. If you want to do that, if you've got the venue, I've got the mics. So give that some thought. Anyways, I hope you're just having a great week. It's been an absolute pleasure to make this for you and share it with you. So I hope you enjoyed the show. Have a great week and happy baking. See you again.